Welcome back. Coast to Coast AM, our guest tonight, Grant Cameron. And Grant, before we get to the phone calls, I've got a full rack of calls in front of me. We'll get to all of them. But I got this from Twitter, and it's from Jay. I don't want to say Jay's last name, but he says this. He said, could you ask Grant about the Nixon time capsule and the handling of UFO files and Tesla papers? What do you know about that?
If it's the story I think it is, I don't really buy it. It may have been this one. The one story is that this thing with they hid this message to the world behind a photo or something like that, and they taped it to somebody's chest to take it to Kissinger. And that just bizarre sort of stuff. I really haven't got any background. The only thing I heard from one source was that Nixon was fascinated in UFOs, and of course everybody knows the story about Gleason, which I think is got some truth to it, because it was at the Air Force Base where Nixon would fly in every time we went to Key Biscayne to the Southern White
House. Yeah, Homestead, I think.
Yeah, Homestead. So right. He would fly there, and then they would take Marine One from there and fly the helicopter over to the thing. So he was there all the time. So that story makes sense. That's one of the problems, is that there's so much information where people are putting it out, and how do you verify this stuff? How do you track it? Unless you've got, I looked at all the Nixon files, and there was, in like every presidential thing, there basically are no files. There are no UFO files in any presidential library, except for maybe the Clintons had quite a bit of stuff. But otherwise, it's so hard to verify these stories. People put them out, and where do you go with it?
Yeah, and of course, Jackie Gleason built the Flying Saucer House, right, that he lived in. It's the detail behind that entire story is so extreme and comprehensive that I just feel that there's something to it, and I'm not sure how far to go. I mean, where do you put on the brakes, right? Where do you go, okay, this is too much, or did it all actually happen? Okay, let's get ready for the phones here. I'll let you do the first call. East or west, Grant?
Let's go west.
You want to go west? Let's go west, young man, to Sean in Santa Barbara, California. You're up first tonight on Coast. Sean, welcome.
Hi, Jimmy. I'll make it brief. You got a great editor. She make a great psychoanalyst. I can tell you. She, she's something. Okay, to the question, but before this question is another question, is could you help this young man that went to City College? Now, it's my stepson, and he went to 4 years studying sociology. Now he's a teacher's aide. Now they dropped him, you know, like a hot potato, but they still have him as a slave for $17 an hour. This kid is amazing with the computer. He's brilliant, and he's just stagnating, and he doesn't realize, and he thinks you guys are quacks, and so, you know, he thinks I'm a mashugana. And he still listens to me. So you're listening to a mashugana. So can you please help this young man? If I can get your number or contact, I don't have computers.
Sean, I have no idea what you're referring to, but I'll say this. Have your son continue to listen to Coast and go and check out Grant's books and other stuff. That's all you can do. People are going to do what they do. I'm not out here to change people's minds or beliefs. It's impossible. You have to go and experience things on your own. But what's your question for Grant?
Is guardian angels aliens, or aliens guardian angels?
That's a great question, Sean, and thank you for that. Grant, so much of this over the years, 2,000-3,000 years of the angel question. What do we do with that?
Okay, I wrote a book called Contact Modalities. So I look at 70 different modalities to get into the field. And basically, I came to the same conclusion that Ray Hernandez came to, was it's all the same thing. Consciousness is primary to the universe. It's made out of consciousness, and you manifest. And that's what comes to this abduction thing. that we keep forgetting that we manifest what we see. Or John Wheeler, who won the Nobel Prize, came up with black hole, wormhole theory, and that sort of stuff.
Right.
He said it's a participatory universe, and you've got to realize that. This whole idea that, you know, it's quantum, and that when there's an observer, then it breaks down into physical and this sort of stuff, is we sort of think that that there's independent stuff other than us. So when you get into near-death experiences and stuff, you can see it becomes, when you get into that world, it's very plastic, and whatever you believe is what you're going to manifest. Like if you have a psychedelic experience or whatever, or the lucid dream research that was done at Stanford University, and they tell the story. So if you're in a lucid dream and it's more real than the real world, everybody will say it was more real than this world. So it's not like an illusion or a dream. And you get into that world. If you see the evil alien or the evil demon or whatever, you go up to it, treat it with unconditional love, and give it a big kiss. It will turn into a positive being and give you a message. So that's the whole thing. And when you get into the dream world, or as Bashar says, we come to you in your dreams because now you're in our world. I think they're all in that world, and it's all like ballet, the giant kabuki theater, where if you are Christian, you're going to see that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got to realize you're part of the thing. It's not some outside thing that's there, and that you are creating what you have, and that this world is not very plastic. But when you get into those higher dimensions or higher vibrations, it becomes very plastic, that you can change everything. Everything is manipulated, and they live in that world, so they can come into this world, come into the physical, and then go back into that world. So yeah, spirit is, all that stuff is true, but we manifest it. It's like, if you ever heard this story, there's a story about the Philip Ghost. Have you ever heard the story about in Canada, where in the 1970s these parapsychologist people, they decide they're gonna create a ghost. So they make up this ghost from the 16th century and he commits suicide off all this sort of stuff. They make the whole story up, and then they're meditating. They're trying to make this ghost appear, and they can't do it. So someone says, well, do it like a seance and get all excited and sing and stuff like that. And this ghost appears, and it responds to their questions. It raises tables and stuff like that. And they manifested that ghost. That's what we've got to realize, is that we are manifesting what we see. And it doesn't mean that it's not real. It's just that whatever's happening, you have a part in it. There's no out there, and you're some poor victim like a cork floating down the stream. You're part of what's happening around you, and we don't believe that yet. But the UFO phenomena is starting to show us that kind of stuff, that you can do stuff that is just, it makes no sense. Like Sherry Wilde, she said, you know, I'm on the ship, and this happens all the time. I'm on the ship, and there's a bunch of dead people on there. And there's Albert Einstein, Albert Schweitzer, and Nikola Tesla. So, of course, you go like, I mean, come on. And so I said to her, I said, okay, Sherry, can you tell me, were they really physical? And she said, I know where you're going with this. Let me tell you what, it may have been a real good hologram, Grant, but they sure look physical to me.
Well, and this is, you brought up John Wheeler. And when we go back to, and who is absolutely one of the most amazing physicists and minds ever. But when you go back to, you know, Wheeler or Feynman or even Einstein or Bohr's, and you look, if you want to go into the fantastical, I mean, discussing UFOs and interdimensionality and extra dimensions and how we are looking at the UFO question today, that's one thing. Go listen to a physicist.
Yeah.
That's where you talk about science fiction, where it's the multiverse and parallel worlds and extra dimensions and string theory and entanglement and locality. It's a whole nother belief system. But this is the world of science and what they are pursuing. Listen, you went west. I'm going to go east.
Okay.
Let's go to Cameron in Death Valley. Wait a minute. Death Valley is out west, but you're listed as east. Cameron, is there an East Coast Death Valley?
No, sir. I don't know what got mixed up with that.
Okay. Well, you know, you're on the east line, Cameron. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. Sorry if I'm a bit shooken up. I just experienced something unlike any other thing. But, see, I just would like to hear what you would have done in this situation.
What happened?
Right? Okay, so I'm going to have to explain this to you first. So we're in this place in Death Valley called the Racetrack, which is an empty lake bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can basically stare up and see the edge of the universe. No light pollution whatsoever.
That's right.
So I was looking up, seeing several moving things, such as like satellites and everything. But then, out of nowhere, I saw something in the sky. It was like a green flash. I was like, okay, that was a bit weird. Didn't know what that was. But then it happened again, and it was a little bit brighter this time. Thought it was just brighter, but it turned out it was getting closer. It came down to the ground. Its lights went off, and it opened up. It was some kind of ship, and it wasn't necessarily a saucer, more of an oval shape. And then several beings came out, and they saw us. They didn't realize we were there, I don't think. So most of them went up, and then they left. One person or being, I don't know how to explain this, some type of alien being, stayed down. And for some reason, he was unlike the others. He was not afraid of us. He came up, touched me on the chest, and started speaking English. He said, "I love you." And, okay, listen, I'm sober. I am sober.
Hey, Cameron, let me jump in. When did this happen?
This happened about 1.5 hours ago.
Oh, this happened tonight?
Yes, tonight.
Wow.
Yes. I just came out of Death Valley, and I've been trying to get on the show since, but there's been no cell reception here.
Right.
Because I kid you not, there's no light, middle of the desert. Okay.
How many witnesses were with you?
Okay, there are 3 other people with me. So,
any pictures?
No, 4. 4.
4.
No pictures.
Yeah.
We did not have our cell phones on this. We left them in the car because we had to go to the bed, and we were just going to enjoy the night because we were not thinking we were going to go and see whatever this was. We did not think this.
Yeah, Grant, do you have any questions for Cameron? I've got about 1 million, and I want to get all of this in before the break.
Well, it's hard to verify. I mean, it's a story. I mean, it's not the pattern that I mentioned this before, that very rarely do you see them land anymore where beings walk out, and usually it's telepathic. So I really don't.
Yeah. Cameron, the being, you said that he spoke English. What did he look like?
So he did not look anything like most people depict them, like in the gray sort of sharp face, you know, with the big black eyes. This was a blue figure, only stood about 3 foot tall, and he did not have eyes. He had some sort of just kind of slits where his eyes would be, where I did not see. And I don't know. I don't know if I would necessarily call them hands, more such, I don't know how to explain them. I did not get a good look, but then he touched me. I don't know if he could speak English before he touched me, but he touched me on the chest, and for some reason, I did not feel frightened whatsoever.
You said 4 other people were with you. Did they see all of this happen too, and did they have any interaction with this being?
Yes. Well, they were with me. They saw it all, but the alien did not touch them. He was only attracted to me for some odd reason. I don't know if he just picked me out randomly or if I had some secret purpose to him. I have no idea.
And then what happened? Did he just turn around and get back into the green light and fly away? What happened?
I've not gotten to the most critical part of the story.
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes, Cameron. I want to hear it. What happened?
Okay, so he looked at me. I blinked my eyes, and he turned into something that looked like us. He turned into a human figure. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. He did not have clothes on. But we found him some clothes, and this.
What do you mean you found him some clothes?
So we were on like sort of camping trip. I'm on vacation right now with my family.
Right.
So we had some clothes in the car for him.
Oh, I got you.
So we went out to the car, got him some clothes, and of course I would have taken a picture by now, but what would that have looked like? It would have looked like I was just hanging out with my buddy.
Right. So what happened next?
What happened next? We basically went over. We did not know what to do. For some reason, he wanted a 7-Eleven slushie.
Okay.
I don't know what.
Okay,
in the world.
Okay, Cameron. It was a good story until then, though.
Until then?
Yeah.
What,
Cameron,
with you?
Yeah, Cameron, have a great night, though. Good until the, you know, it was good until the 7-Eleven slushie.
That's what I said. There's a pattern, and it didn't fit the pattern. There's 3,200 experiences that were surveyed, and we have some pretty good data on what normally happens.
Nothing about 7-Eleven slushies?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, this is what I always find fun and entertaining about this is when somebody, look, I've had my experiences, Grant, I've shared them with you, you've shared yours with me, and I have always had people around me. I've had a couple alone, but when I share the experiences, I'm trying to validate everybody else's experiences that were around me, because they're going to tell other people too as well.
Yeah.
And I don't expect everybody to believe everything, right? But what I do leave out of the stories are the slushies at 7-Eleven. That's the part, because this is Coast to Coast. I have our guest tonight, Grant Cameron. This is what Open Lines on the Saturday night is all about. Grant, just stay right there. We'll get to more phone calls next. You can follow Grant on Twitter at Grant Cameron, and we'll be right back after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Grant Cameron, and I want to let everybody know at the top of the hour, I'm going to go to Straight Open Lines, and it's so great to just hang out with all of you. So we'll be doing that at the top of the hour. And Grant, I just got this tweet that just came in, and this will show you how smart the Coast audience is. Joe says, Jimmy, you would think if an alien landed and wanted anything food or beverage-wise, it would be In-N-Out Burger and not a Slurpee. So there you go. This audience is on top of their game. Let's get straight back to the phones. Let's see. Let's go to John in Indian Wells, California. John, you've been hanging for a while. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. I appreciate you taking my call and Grant.
Beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely, John.
Eight or ten of your words, and I get 5 or 10 flashes of visions. You speak so fast, it just all conglomerates. And Jimmy, saw you at Contact in the Desert the last 2 years of the Joshua Tree. And was at Melinda Leslie's Night Vision Goggles seminar. And I could hear you, but I couldn't see you because it was so dark.
Yeah, those were pretty exciting nights out there. And I'm glad that you were there to witness what was going on in the skies. It was pretty incredible.
It really was. It was very cool. And then I had been there the year before when Ed Grimsley was there, and I had spoken with him for a few months after that contact, and then ended up buying a pair of his goggles, which had the French tubes in them, and it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your question for Grant tonight, John?
Well, not so much a question. I've had several experiences. First, when I was 18 years old, I was like 7:15 in the morning, going up to my school bus stop, and my sister was behind me, and I'm walking. It's in Ohio. It's probably about 35 miles east of Columbus, Ohio, which is about 70 miles east of Wright-Patterson. My dad worked there, and he worked at New York Air Force Station. And up in the sky, there's probably like a 700-foot overcast. I'm a pilot also. And there was a aluminum craft there. It was like a darker aluminum craft. and it had several black rectangle splotches on it, and it also had some soot-like reentry splashes on it.
No, you saw it up. You saw it up close.
Yep, it was probably no more than 1,000 feet from me.
You know, and Grant, listening to what John just said, this is what I find so interesting, is that I've seen physical crafts, daylight situations, and those types of sightings are becoming more and more rare, where we had a lot of that in, before the 2000s. In the last 20 years, it's been a different game, hasn't it?
Yeah, the one you're describing sounds a lot like the one Bud Hopkins had in 1964, where he's driving with these people from England, and the thing suddenly appears over the top of the car, and it's just sitting there, and he's looking at it, and it's just sitting there, and then it takes off, and the next day he goes back and retraces his route to see how long was he driving, how long did this thing last, and he was just obsessed with it. That's where I get this idea of the theory of wow, that they want to get your attention, and I don't know if you got other experiences, John, but usually you find out people have other experiences. They'll say, well, you know, then this happened. Anything weird happened when you were a kid that's, you know, paranormal? Oh, yeah, this and that. And you suddenly realize that it's a lifelong experience. Because usually people who see UFOs, especially if you have the abduction experience, it's a lifer experience.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not a one-time event.
That's right. And John, thank you for the phone call.
Well, do you want to hear any more?
Well, I'm going to try to get in the rest before we hit the top of the hour. Thank you so much, John, and enjoy your weekend.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, right on. I like those kinds of sightings, the light crafts that I've seen so many of, but it's the physical craft that you can't explain that really catches my attention. Let's go to Mark in Philadelphia, Wild Card. Mark, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Fan of both of yours. Many years, of course. People might remember me from the 90s. I go by Mark the Webmaster, and I ended up being a big Mars anomaly researcher.
Right on.
Back in the Art Bell days. Crazy times. So, but that really only came after the experience that I'm going to tell you about, which I don't believe I've ever told anyone on the air at all. So it was 1997. I'd had my big sort of discovery of new age paranormal meditation, visualization, that sort of thing from 94 to 96 in California. But I came back east, and in 97, through a creative visualization like that, I managed to get a gig as the webmaster for one of the top, what we called infotainment companies, back the 900 numbers when they were big. Yeah. And I put a deal together between the company and one of the major UFO-related media companies to put out 1-900 UFO lines. Have you ever heard of those before?
No, but continue.
Well, the point is you haven't heard of those, and the reason why you didn't hear it from me is because of the story that I'm about to tell you. So I had managed to get the company to give me a T3 line back in the day, $25,000 a month. I downloaded all the material I could get from NASA, and I discovered what's known as the second face on Mars in Cydonia, the westernmost object called the Rounded Formation by Mark Carlotto, for example. So basically, I had downloaded the material, and I discovered this thing late at night at the company, and it just blew my mind. So I put up a one-page website called Face 2 at Cydonia, what is this, basically. The next morning, so I go home. The next morning, I get up. I'm driving to work, which is northwest of the city. And as I get almost 90% of the way there, I'm driving out there, and this is going on through my head. Wow. So I'm on my way to close the deal, to send the fax, which will set up these 1-900 lines. So the night before, I discovered that face, and here this is. And it just ran through my mind. Why haven't I seen a UFO before? I've seen all the movies, seen the TV. I've heard from so many friends these mind-blowing stories, but I never had anything happen to me. And just at that moment, as I'm about 7 minutes away from getting to work, I heard a voice in my head, which references the Grant's earlier mentioning of telepathy, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a voice in my head say, look up. And I looked, you know, up above the tree line, basically driving down this road from my childhood I'd always driven on, and they're at what I would call two World Trade Centers high. Basically, if you hold your hand out and were to have two quarters right next to each other, but a silver oval object, totally metallic, and I can tell you that because the sun was over my left shoulder and the light was reflecting off the top left-hand corner, and it was beautiful, but it was this, you know, unbelievable silver, not a blimp, not a plane. I've been to all the air shows. I know about these things on that level. And I just went nuts. I took my glasses off, took my head out the window, was like, oh my God, what is this? Why is this happening now? It's up there, it's still, it's not moving, it's not flying. Again, it's not any kind of undercarriage underneath it. It's not the Goodyear blimp. And I had basically a freak out as I drove down the road. I passed where my grandmother used to stay with her. So I started thinking, oh, well, this is wild. She was sort of that type of weirdo like me. I go another two blocks. I get next door to where I'd been bar mitzvahed. I'm like, oh my God, is this some kind of, you know, crossover, you know, with the whole thing with all the UFOs in the Bible that I'd always heard about? But this object is still there, and I can't get anybody to look at it with me, but it's a crystal clear blue sky, perfect, unbelievable object, not moving at all. It, you know, the voice had said, look up, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, is this because I'm about to put out these 900 UFO lines? You know, just was all these thoughts were going through my head. I start thinking, if I can just get down to this cemetery with the big lake where all the kids cut class and are hanging out there, I can get out there and get people to look at this thing with me. But again, I'm on my way to work, and it looks like if you were to draw, you know, as a crow flies, I know it sounds crazy, but as high as it was, it looked like it was hovering directly above where my job was, where my office was.
Well, you know, Mark, when I hear something like this, because when I share a story, and I know that Grant is going to comment as well, but whenever I share a story like that of my own experience, and somebody will come back to me and say, well, you know, it happened just for you. And I hear that all the time. And now, Mark, I'm about to say the same words to you. That happened just for you. And you can't really look at it any other way, right, Grant?
Yeah, that's the theory of, wow, why do UFOs have lights on them? So you can see them. They want you to see them. They're not going anywhere. They're not doing anything. They want you to see them. You're part of the game. And what you describe is pretty common, the idea that it tells you to look up. Or I have a friend, very close friend here, who was watching a movie, and at the 10 minutes to the end of the movie, where it just gets to where you're going to figure out what's going on, he suddenly gets the idea, I should go outside and skywatch. I should take my laser with me. And he walks out, and of course, this thing goes flying by, and he hits it with his laser. That you hear that all the time, is they basically, you're part of this thing, and a lot of mystical literature will describe the fact nothing happens by accident.
No, that's right. And Mark, thank you for the phone call, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. But that is a great experience. And like I said, that was just for you. Mark, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, sir. Would you like to hear just the 60-second conclusion?
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Second version. As I'm driving, I'm staring up at it too much. I slam my brakes, and I'm about to hit the car in front of me. I look up, and the thing moves in that strange step-like pattern, which is the classic, you know, nothing would survive, blah, blah, blah. I slam my thing into park. I look up, and I swear to God to you, the thing looked to me, it was in the exact same spot, but it looked like what you would describe as phasing out, almost like a pixelation, but not television pixelation, like it was starting to go in some kind of cloaking device. Some people will call it that. I look away for a second. I look back up, and it's gone.
Same thing happened to me, Mark. Same thing happened to me 2 years ago.
Boom.
So, yeah,
boom.
There you go.
And the bottom line is, you know, I'll call in some other time and tell you some of my experiences that my friends have had and took me into their confidence. But when you have an experience like that, it's not a question of, oh, are these things real anymore or this or that. That's why I dove into ufology, went to the conferences, met all the top people, and then, you know, continued and put the site up all about Mars and all that was reached out to by all the various people at NASA. Final point, when I put up that site over the next year until I finally took it down, when I got one of the calls from Langley, if you're familiar, they, you know, really got into detail with me. During that time period, so many of the people involved, again, you know, looked into it, couldn't come up with any explanation, but at the end, the website was getting 3,000 visitors a day, a full 1,500 of them. Back then, they did not hide their IP addresses. I'm talking Congress, Naval Warfare Battle Labs, Space Battle Labs. There were half of the visitors every day were from NASA, from all these major military institutions. And when I knew I was finally going to have to, you know, be ready for something is when I got EOP, Executive Office of the President, .gov started showing up. And I was like, oh, 36 hours later, I got that phone call.
There you go.
Suffice it to say, they know about it. They know all about those the things on Mars, I'm quite sure, the structures, as well as these experiences. And it's the we cannot affect them in any way, obviously, with our weapons, even with everything that we've seen. So, you know, clearly they are not going to say, this is national security, we can't affect these things. And that's why you have the unexplained show now, which is finally bleeding out. You can't, you know, it may take decades, but eventually all this material is going to come out. So hopefully civilization, people listening to this, just don't freak out when it comes out, because that's not going to do us any good. They're already here. They're all over the place. They're from all over. And when we finally, you know, get to that point, they'll reveal themselves. It's not going to be a government thing. I don't believe it'll be, you know, just making themselves know.
Thank you so much, Mark, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. I've got time for maybe one more quick call. Let's see, where am I going to go? I'm going to try to squeeze one in. Let's go to Mike in Colorado. Mike, you've got right, 1 minute. Yes.
Thank you so much for taking my call. It's great to talk to you again. And I have to say, you know, as a young person, not only do I recommend Coast to Coast to my friends, but also Fade to Black. That's your show is amazing. Grant, it's great to hear you back on Coast to Coast. And I had a question and comment prepared that I wrote out. So I know you've made a lot of freedom of information requests from the Clinton administration regarding UFO incidents. And it's interesting because Bill Clinton had a keen interest in the government's study of the possibility of alien contact with Earth. And I was curious to know, of all the current pending freedom of information requests you've made, if you could pick one FOIA request to be granted immediately, which one would it be and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. Grant, can you do that in 90 seconds?
You're talking about the Clintons or of course, the
just
one
in general, what FOIA requests would you want granted?
Well, of course, you'd want the one with the crash flying saucers. But I can tell you the one with the Clintons that I didn't get, I filed about 100 of them, and I've not even read the material. I've got maybe 4,000 or 5,000 pieces of material. I didn't even read it. I've got it all. I recovered it. But the one that they denied me was John Podesta's 50th birthday party. I had discovered that he had had a X-Files birthday party. He was a big X-Files fan. He would go home and watch X-Files when it came on. And Bill and Hillary dressed up like the X-Files in this. And there was one video and there was 83 photographs. And they denied it to me. They said it was privacy. I said, it can't be privacy. He was the chief of staff and it was in the White House. It was taken with White House film and they denied it. And then I filed an appeal and they still denied it. And then later on, they released all the paper material, like stuff from the birthday party, people congratulating him. I said, is my videos yet? And they said, no, you were told in 2006 you're not getting it. You're not getting it. So that was the one I never got, was this Bill and Hillary dressed up like the X-Files at John Podesta's 50th birthday party inside the White House.
Now, and thank you for the phone call, Mike. Grant, you've just released a book. You've got a few more that are getting ready to get published. Tell us where everybody can go and find them.
Well, they'll all be on Amazon. I have the latest. I got two Shasta books coming out, which is, talks about the second one I'm about to do is about the portals. I get into the portals. I there's always these things. Do they have the technology? My guess is if they have technology, one of the things they have is portal technology. They have some understanding of it. So I'm going to talk about what I know about the portal technology and where I think it's coming from. And then I'm going to do the alien documents, which is going to be dramatic. So you got the Wilson document, the alien autopsy document. I've got a pile of more documents that I got out of dead people's files. And I'm putting them in a book called The Alien Documents.
And it's going to have some very interesting stuff, like a eyes-only study for President Johnson and a bunch of other interesting documents that I'm going to release.
Grant, thank you so much. And the links for Grant's books are over at coasttocoastam.com. Grant Cameron, thank you so much. I'll be right back after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM.